Is an air barrier more important than a vapor barrier? Well, it depends. But because moisture rides on the convection currents of air, stopping air is usually more important than stopping vapor diffusion. Welcome to WGBA Radio R60. Today's show is excerpted from a two-day class called Building Science Fundamentals, taught by Joe Stiebrick and John Straub of Building Science Corporation. For information on attending a live class, go to buildingscienceseminars.com. Last week, Dr. John talked about the mechanisms of air movement, and he touched on some of the consequences. This week, he talks about humidity and how air leakage can lead to bugs, mold, and rot.
So basically, if moist air contacts a cool surface, condensation will occur. And an air barrier is one way of stopping the humid air from getting to cold surfaces. Because in any building enclosure in cold weather, you will have a cold surface. The cladding, the exterior sheathing, and if indoor air can contact that cladding or exterior sheathing, condensation can occur. And so what we're trying to do when we're installing an air barrier is to prevent that cold surface from being in connection with humid air. So we need to understand a little bit here about water vapor to go a little bit further and we quantify this. Water vapor in air has a maximum storage capacity, if you will, depending on temperature. Warm air can store lots of moisture as vapor in the air. Cold air can store only very little. And that is summarized in the psychrometric chart. How many people here have seen the psychopathic chart? I mean, most people have. This was invented by Willis Carrier from Carrier Air Conditioning in 1904. If you want to understand psychrometrics, what you only need is three lines, actually. You need to know that the vertical axis is the moisture content. The units don't really matter. We can measure them in a whole bunch of ways. But it's the air moisture content. It's measured in things like ounces of water per cubic yard, very rarely, because that actually has some physical meaning to most humans. Whereas what mechanical engineers like to use, and it's questionable if they're even a subset of humanity, is they like to use inches of mercury or grains of moisture per pound of air. So how much is 10 grains of moisture? And how much really is a pound of air? Those are completely meaningless physical units to most of us. And so everyone blanks out and doesn't understand because they're not given real units. But actually, the good news is you don't even have to care what the units are for most of the work. On the bottom, I have temperature, which is obviously important. And the third thing that matters is the maximum moisture content that air can have as a function of temperature. As we go from 90 degrees down to 20 degrees, the amount of moisture that can be stored in the air changes by about an order of magnitude, a factor of 10. That's a big change. So this is like a gas tank that shrinks as the temperature gets colder. So when it's hot, you can store a lot in this tank, but when it's cold, you can't store much at all. And if you were to have a large gas tank filled with gas and then you shrunk it, eventually you'd fill up and spill over, and that's condensation. Now, if air is completely saturated, completely full, they call that saturated air. They also have these neat terms that if it's half full, the air is 50% relative humidity. And if it's one quarter full, they call that 25%. And if it's three quarters full, it's 75%, right? So that's what that means. It's how full it is. Just 50% relative humidity or 75% relative humidity doesn't tell me how much moisture is in the air. It only tells me how close I am to full. So if I want to know what the actual amount of moisture in the air is, I need to know both the temperature and the relative humidity. If I put those two pieces together, temperature, relative humidity, then I can go across and figure out how much moisture I have in that air. Another important aspect to understanding this chart is that here's a typical wintertime condition in Kansas or in Minneapolis or in Boston. It's around freezing outside, 30 degrees, 32 degrees, and it's snowing. And because it's snowing, it means that the relative humidity outdoors is 100%. If you sprinkle water all over the air for a long time, it's 100%, it's fully saturated, right? That's how it works. So if I take that air and I heat it up and bring it into the building like I'd like to do on a cold day, heat it up to 72 degrees, the amount of moisture in the air stays exactly the same. All I did was heat it. I didn't add any moisture. I'm just heating it. But the relative humidity drops because the storage capacity of the air has increased with temperature. So the relative humidity drops, and we can get down to under 25% relative humidity. But we don't just leave it there. Most of us then do stuff like breathe and produce moisture and sweat. Some people actually boil cabbage and spaghetti and vent their clothes dryers into their homes to save energy, or dry a cord of freshly cut lumber in the basement of their house, which means all that moisture is being dumped in, or grow pharmaceutical plants in one of the bedrooms under lights. And all of that generates moisture. And therefore, as we add moisture, the relative humidity rises, and the absolute moisture content rises as well. Both relative and absolute humidity move. Now, why does that matter? Well, it matters in that now as that air leaks out of the building and it passes through the building enclosure, if it sees a surface colder than, say, 52, 53 degrees in this example, it will reach its full capacity to store moisture, and after that, condensation will ensue. And so if the cladding is somewhere around 30 degrees as well as the outdoor air temperature, the air, if it were to contact the outside sheathing, would drop all of this moisture that it gained on the way out, and it would dump it on the cold sheathing surface. So that's a typical air leakage condensation cycle that we're trying to avoid. It's absolutely that straightforward. This, by the way, has nothing to do with vapor barriers. Has nothing to do with vapor diffusion. It has to do with a packet of air, 1 cubic foot of air, that I actually take and I push it through that hole in the wall, and it gets cool. And as long as it gets cool, it's going to follow this chart. So how can I avoid it getting cool and condensing? Well, one thing is I can shoot it through that hole so fast that it goes outside before it cools down. And then we see fog coming out. So that's what we see when we have a natural gas furnace or something like that. They fire that stuff out, and you see this fog forming in the air next to it. Or when you breathe on a cold winter day, you're producing pretty humid air, and it right away fogs up. If, on the other hand, you take your woolen mitts and you blow the air slowly into that woolen mitt, it'll condense all on the inside, and it'll be a really yucky, stinky mitt because it'll have all my fog in it, right? So that's what I used to do to my sisters, right? They'd blow into their mitts. And see, I learned that about building science. I was like 6, and I had figured out the whole air leakage condensation thing. So that is the condensation process. The same thing happens in reverse in the summertime. Let's say the outside conditions are, I don't know, let's say they're 85 degrees and it's pretty humid, 75% relative humidity. If that outdoor air leaks inward until it contacts the surface below about 76 degrees, it'll condense. So how many of us work in areas where it can be more than 86 degrees and 75% humidity in the summertime? I mean, I certainly do in Toronto, Buffalo, Minneapolis. Basically, the rule is anything that's east of the Mississippi, you should expect to have a significant number of hours above 75 degrees and 75% relative humidity. You can expect that. And if you're further south you go in that zone, you're going to start having not just, you know, 500 hours a summer or 400 hours. You're going to start on the Gulf Coast, there are 3,000 hours a year. You know, a third of the year is above those conditions. So if you were to actually have an exhaust fan in one of those hotels that Joe described and build it in Galveston, Texas, you're truly screwed, because all that air leaking in is going to condense on all the air-conditioned surfaces it can see. Now, hopefully, the only air that you draw in goes through your air conditioner, because then the coldest surface it sees is the coils on your air conditioner, and that condenses the moisture off where you have control. But if it leaks in through the wall or the roof or in that entrance canopy on the hospital, not good. Now, here's something that's important about the cold weather condition. And many times we didn't have problems with air leakage in cold weather because our buildings were so well ventilated, meaning leaky, that the relative humidity in the home would rarely rise up above 25%. So we had, I mean, where I grew up in an old farmhouse, it was leaky like crazy, had 2 wood stoves in it that ventilated the home. It was so dry, my eyeballs would shrivel up and hang by the optic nerves through the entire cold period of the winter. As we have tightened up homes and not provided guaranteed ventilation, the result has been that the relative humidities have gone up. Then the amount of moisture in the air in absolute terms and the amount of condensation that can occur is dramatically different. And it's not just condensation on the exterior sheathing, it's now condensation on the inside face of the window. It's now condensation inside the wall wherever it can find a cold spot. So not having control of your indoor relative humidity in cold weather is amazingly important to how much condensation you get for how long, and whether or not you get it at all. And very dry interiors have saved us for a long time, being able to ignore this problem. If air leaks through and you can't usually see the condensation, unless you're a forensic engineer like Joe and I and you go around and you cut holes in walls, it can happen in walls, it's just that we often don't get to see inside, but we know it happens. But where you get to see it a lot is in attics, because all you have to do is pop the hatch and see the frost forming on the underside of the OSB or plywood sheathing. And it doesn't take much of a hole in a humid house to result in the condensation accumulating as frost. And then when the sun comes out, warms up this black shingle roof, of course, the water all comes out in a couple hours, and then you have a roof leak. And you call the roofer, and he puts in a new roof, and it doesn't fix a damn thing, because that wasn't the problem.
Tune in next week for Dr. Joe's discussion of air pressure and how it affects indoor air quality. WGBA Radio R60 is a production of greenbuildingadvisor.com. Thanks for listening.